This is a recording from JABA. On October 19th, 2007, JABA hosted a one-day conference called Crafting Intentional Communities, Cooperative Living Along Life's Journey. The event was designed to explore new housing and living innovations for seniors to live, grow, and age in community. This is the first in a series of podcasts from that event. Karen Biber, Viable Futures Planner for JABA, opened the morning session.
Our first speaker, as you see on your program, is Dr. Drew Leader, and he is at Loyola in Maryland and has written several books that are available, of course, at the bookstore outside. But the more important thing in the present is that he is having some back difficulty, and so we've gotten him here. Chris has gotten him here, and so unfortunately he's not as pain-free as he would like to be. So I don't want to spend any more time and let him. Are you going to speak from there?
Come over there.
Okay. So I'll let him give you more of his background and share his knowledge with us.
Thanks very much. I'm here to talk about aging, including some of the challenges and limitations. And as Karen said, I'm in a great place to speak on it this morning because I'm experiencing them, having driven down from Baltimore. For whatever reason, I have a herniated disc in my back and it's seized up and I've got leg pain. And I spent from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. lying naked on my hotel room floor, hoping I could crawl to a telephone. And if you don't like visualizing me in that position, just wipe that out. But it's loosened up enough for me to be able to come here this morning, but I think I'm not going to be able to participate in the whole day's festivities, which I will miss. And I'm very much with you in spirit and will be available as a consultant. Been talking with Chris Murray, et cetera. But my job at the moment is just to introduce some overview themes about aging, and particularly aging and spirituality. In our culture, I don't think I need to tell you that two things are happening. One, we're getting older. There's a kind of graying of America. So that whereas at the turn of the 19th century, the average lifespan was 47, it's now about 77. You know, maybe, what is it, a 60, 70% increase in the average lifespan. And where the number of people over 65 was about 3 million in 1900, it's now over 33 million and rising. So what does this mean? What are we supposed to do with all of these extra years as individuals and as a society? And one thing I want to suggest is that our models of successful aging, aging well, have their limitations. Maybe they're not the full answer. For example, one model we're very well familiar with, and I have a medical degree as well as a degree in philosophy, we'll call the socio-medical model of successful aging. And essentially that's saying that we want to do well by ourselves medically in terms of prevention and treatment. We want to take care of ourselves financially. We want 401ks and Social Security to make sure that our aging process isn't a sort of tumble downhill into severe financial, social, medical problems. But if I were to ask you, what's the problem with having that be your preeminent model of successful aging? Any reactions to that? Idealistic, meaning what? So it's difficult in a certain sense. If we have that kind of model of successful aging, not everyone's going to be able to achieve it. And those who don't will be an example of failed aging. Yes? Okay. Okay. Okay, so things may happen to us that are uncontrollable. You know, once again, I'm sort of experiencing that at the moment. Suddenly I got out of bed and my body collapsed. Once again, does that mean we have failed? Should we have prevented that? Well, maybe there's no way to do that for certain. Another hand? Yeah.
It makes our life all about money.
Makes our life about money. So it doesn't really give us some independent, profound source of meaning. It's about simply keeping kind of body and finances together. By the way, as I'm talking, and I'll try to speed up a little bit because all our speakers have a limited amount of time, there is a notes for this talk, a kind of outline that's available in your packet. And you might, you know, you might find it helpful to sort of look along. We've been talking about the socio-medical model of successful aging, but another alternative, I would call it the productive model of successful aging. You see it exemplified by people like, I don't know, Betty Friedan, who wrote a book, The Fountain of Age, following up her feminist work with a focus on how even in aging, you can be energetic, you can be productive, you can be sexually active, you can be creative. And rather than all the emphasis on the negative that is present within the socio-medical model, all the things that could go wrong that you're trying to prevent, this seems like a nice alternative because it emphasizes how vital we can be as we age. But what's the problem with that? This kind of productive model. Yeah.
We only have value when we do.
Okay. So we're not human beings, we're human doings. It's a very powerful message in our society. And we probably were quite involved with that when we were young and when we were in midlife. Is there ever a time when we get to release on that? Is there anything genuinely special about later life other than simply prolonging midlife vitality indefinitely, or attempting to? We may not be able to. Another vision of successful aging I have down here is what I call the consumerist model. Once again, this relates to the, you know, power of capitalism in shaping our culture. And here the idea is that later life is not so much about doing and being productive. You've done that already. Now you get to sit back and enjoy the fruits of your labor. You get to go on carousel cruises and participate in luxury retirement communities and travel. But what's the problem with that as your model of successful aging? Yeah. Okay, a beautiful example. Could everyone hear it pretty well? Good. I'd hate to try to repeat that from the beginning to the end. But yeah, in the consumerist model, there is something missing, something about meaning, connection, community, service. I talked with someone who was in a very nice retirement community, and I said, how is it? And they said, well, it's kind of like a cruise ship. You know, there's pleasant, there are activities to do, you can play ping pong, but I'm not sure this cruise ship is going anywhere. You know, it doesn't connect me to anything deeply. So if we take a look at this sheet, if you happen to have it, we might say that these different models, for one thing, they're connected with different living environments in which we place our elders. You might say the socio-medical model implies things like assisted living, nursing homes, that we will be caring for the medical needs of our patients. The productive model seems to imply that just like at the height of midlife vitality, we want to be fully independent and autonomous and living on our own. The consumerist model, as I mentioned, might imply something like maybe a high-end retirement community, where your needs are well taken care of and there are pleasures and things to do, and hopefully you have the finances to be able to pay for that, which many people don't. But really, we've also said that these models, even when they're at their best, somehow fail to address some very deep dimensions of what it is to be human and what it is to age and grow into a kind of fulfillment and depth that has tremendous meaning for ourselves and others. So let's turn to another model of successful aging that is less prominent within our culture, but we see in different spiritual traditions and different lands throughout history, especially traditional cultures. They think of elderhood as connected with spirituality, and that there's something special in the later years of life that enable us, even if the body is beginning to deteriorate, the soul is on its journey to a certain kind of completion, certain kind of fulfillment. And there may be even certain aspects of the aging process that are ideal at provoking spiritual growth. It's a little bit like a sort of upper level course. I'm a college teacher, and there are the 100 level courses, the 200 level courses, 300 level graduate. And you might say that on the soul's journey, some of the things we have to go through in aging, like waking up this morning and having severe herniated disc pain, is a kind of advanced curriculum that, if I can work with it successfully, may provoke a deepening of soul in ways that would not have been available to me when I was young and when I was in vigorous midlife taking care of those tasks. Now, having said that, the spiritual model of aging has many different facets, archetypes, models, modes of expression. I did write a book. I think it's not out there at the moment, but I have a couple of boxes over at my hotel room. The last ones in the world, since the book is now out of print, and we'll, I think, try to bring them over a little later. And I'm not really trying to sell the book, because as I say, it's out of print and they're almost all gone. But in it, I try to deal with a lot of different kind of archetypes of the spirituality of later life. And I think I discussed something like 10 or 12 of them. Let me just briefly mention four today, and we'll think about their implications vis-a-vis communities and intentional communities. The first one I call the contemplative model of elder spirituality. An example would be from the Indian text, The Laws of Manu, written around the first century BC to AD, somewhere in there. He lays out a life stage model, which has become traditional within Hinduism. And he says that after being a student and after being a householder, where you raise your family, you pursue a career, you make money, you do service to society, when your hair turns white, which is starting to happen for me, when your skin grows wrinkled, which is starting to happen for me, and when you see the children of your children, when you're a grandparent, which is still a little ways off for me. But how many people have met these three criteria? Okay. It's time to go off into the forest, this says, and leave behind your family, your position, your roles, your money, your comfort. And according to the classical Hindu model, meditate, undergo voluntary physical austerities, expose yourself to the heat, cold, and rain of the fire, study the Vedas, the classical spiritual texts of Hinduism, and devote yourself to a contemplative quest to realize your unity with the divine in a way that you probably were not able to focus on when you were so busy raising children and earning money and doing your social dharma, your duties. In a certain sense, at least from the American point of view, you couldn't come up with a worse model of successful aging because it's not very pleasurable, it's not very productive, it's not very consumerist, it's not even a very good safeguard for your physical health. But if we kind of reverse the gestalt, we could say everything that in our society is viewed as a series of losses and limitations. You know, I may have to go on a fixed income, I may become sexually inactive, I may have physical austerities in the forms of aches and pains and limitations. I may have to leave behind my house. My children and friends may leave me, move elsewhere, or die. All these terrible losses, in the Hindu model, in a sense, they're leaned into and voluntarily chosen when this person goes off into the forest. Because the model is saying, this is as it should be, not only in terms of biological nature, but in terms of what the soul needs for its evolution. It has been fixated on certain kinds of attachments and roles. I'm a mom or a dad. I'm a CEO or a vice president. I'm the face that I see when I look back in the mirror, you know, attractive young person. But who are we when all that stuff starts to be taken away from us? Is there any transcendent, divine dimension of self that extends beyond all those limited identifications and maybe even beyond the grave? That's what our soul is being challenged to confront by all these changes of aging. And in the Hindu model, you lean into it instead of resisting it and struggling against it. And especially you give yourself contemplative time and space to go into this inward journey of prayer and meditation and study and reflection. And when we talk about adopting this into an American context, we probably don't want to go off by ourselves. We want to do this with others. We want to do this in community. And even in India, this model was often lived out by people going to ashrams when they became older, spiritual communities, and pursuing this quest with others. But it does suggest, and I'm sure Dean Peterson will talk about this in relation to the Elder Spirit Community of Abington, that these ideal communities are not just nursing homes or leisure retirement communities, but they're places of contemplation. Maybe a little bit like monastic settings, where people's inward journey is honored, whether that's through prayer or meditation or listening to music or painting or going for walks in the forest. We each have different ways of opening up that space. And one of the messages here is we need to be doing that as we age. That's a crucial part of elder spirituality. Any quick comments or, yeah?
Yes, you talked about a model of spirituality, and I guess I embrace a more pragmatic model of practicality. I see our marketing forces from New York have worked consistently to segment our society more and more, to target market the 5 to 15-year-old or the 15 to 50-year-old or some smaller segment. And the result of that segmentation has been a separation of the elder group from the younger group. And it makes our society less and less collaborative and forces it to become more and more competitive. And I came down here to hear the discussion on co-housing because I see co-housing as a model that focuses, originally focused on intergenerational living in a collaborative effort that was very realistic to look at the practicality of living life now. Not waiting for obesity or dementia to catch up with you and force you into an institutional isolation.
Thank you. And you could be a plant in the audience because I don't mean a potted plant. I mean someone I planted in the audience because it's a wonderful lead into talking about another model of later life spirituality that maybe incorporates more of the what you were calling the practicality and the community dimension. Let's turn from Indian to Native American Indian traditional culture. And as you're probably aware of, there are traditions of things like the elder council of a tribe, clan mothers and clan fathers, and the notion that the elders of the tribe are particularly associated with wisdom and spirituality. They've had long life experience. They have a long memory of tribal and natural rhythms and customs. They have a farther-sighted perspective than a younger person. They have a broader concern for the good of the community and the good of the earth than someone who's focused on their own ego establishment or just raising their own family. And they're closer to God by virtue of being closer to death. In the Native American paradigm, that's, you know, you're getting closer to that other dimension as you grow older. And so elders are encouraged, even demanded, to remain within the tribe, not to go off into the forest, but, I mean, yes, to do vision quests, etc., but to come back and play a crucial role in mentoring the youth, in giving leadership to the tribe, in assisting with long-range decision-making unto the seventh generation, considering the impacts of any decision. And I think we can probably think of people within our culture who exemplify the archetype of the wise elder, the elder as guide. Any, I don't know, public figures come to mind?
Gandhi.
Okay. I'm sorry? Jimmy Carter, who kind of did more after being president than when he was kind of younger and more politically powerful. But as he grew into his elderhood, he became more of a real statesman and world figure. Yes? Nelson Mandela. The Dalai Lama. Wonderful examples. How about Joe Torre? I'm a Yankee fan, and I'm so upset that you don't know what I'm talking about, some of you, but Joe Torre, the manager, who's actually 67 years old, quit yesterday. But in the world of sports, to me, he was kind of the wise elder who navigated the very shaky ship of the Yankees through many troubled waters. But anyway, I won't go into a big digression. How about some women? Yeah. Mother Teresa? I'm sorry? Marion Williamson. Mm-hmm. Golda Meir. Amiji, the Hindu saint. Hillary Clinton? Just thought I'd see what your reaction was to that. But that's a very good point. We're in Native American tribes, not all of them, but a lot of them, the clan mother is as or more important than the clan father, because women are thought to have this, you know, nurturing fertility that the tribe and the earth really needs to draw on. So in closing our discussion of this archetype, I would just say that we need to grow into guides and wise elders who can help the community. The community doesn't always ask for our help. You know, we've sort of lost the spirit of turning to the elder for wise counsel and advice. But we almost need to be proactive in seeking to be elders within our congregation, within our place of work, through our volunteer energies, as you were mentioning, with our grandchildren, and also within our intentional communities, making sure that we're contributing to one another and also to the larger world that needs to hear from us. We live in a time where this tremendous influx of elders doesn't need to be a drain on social resources. That's what people are always talking about, what's going to happen to Medicare and Social Security. We can see it more as itself a tremendously valuable social resource that the culture is going to need these 33 million plus elders, and we need to make ourselves available. Okay, a third archetype of elder spirituality, I call this the wounded healer. And it's confronting head-on the fact that as we age, we will undergo wounds. There will be losses, limitations. People we care for will die. There will be life disappointments. We will struggle with acute and chronic physical illnesses. We will see our death approaching toward us from the future. And just to pull out an exemplary figure, let's turn to the Judeo-Christian tradition and reflect for a moment on how the story of Jesus, even though he's a young man, he's undergoing in kind of rapid form, like time-lapse photography, a lot of the things that happen to us as we age. He's undergoing physical pain, crown of thorns, crucifixion, social humiliation and ostracism, kind of being abandoned by disciples, being mocked by soldiers. And we know the experience in our culture of elders being mocked, or the kinds of humiliations that come when you check into a hospital and they give you a gown open in the back. And he even goes through a kind of spiritual crisis. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? He's quoted as saying on the cross, and let this cup pass from me, he says in the Garden of Gethsemane. But of course, in the gospel story, it's fundamentally a story about God's love still being present and available, even when it seems to be absent. And Jesus contributing and loving others and growing in strength and compassion, in a certain sense, through the virtue of undergoing this suffering himself. And as we go through the sufferings of age, the wounds of age, it may enable us to become greater healers, more wise, more strong, more compassionate for others. And also it may enable us to become better receivers, because I think part of the spirituality of later life is not just giving, like Jesus did, but he also told his disciples, let me wash your feet. You have to learn to receive, to really close the circle of love. And a lot of times that's one of the biggest challenges for elders. You know, I don't want to be a burden on my children. I don't want anyone to have to wait on me hand and foot. But in a certain sense, this is part of the giving and receiving of love and intimacy and the actualization of the interdependency of the human community. You changed your children's diapers. It's time for them to change your diapers, perhaps. And so that this implies in a community we build, in an intentional community, it's not going to be an institutional model where professional caregivers just come in and do all the services for us. We're relying on one another. We're taking care of one another in a community of love realized in practical forms. And I experienced that this morning when I was lying on my hotel floor and got a hold of a friend, and he got a hold of his doctor, and, you know, Chris Murray and his physician were helpful, and everyone at the conference has been helpful. And it was a real lesson to me in interdependency, having the humility to receive and not just to give. Okay, the last archetype, very quickly, let me read to you a poem you may well know. It's called Warning by Jenny Joseph. It's popularly known as When I Am an Old Woman, I Shall Wear Purple. And it reads, when I am an old woman, I shall wear purple with a red hat which doesn't go and doesn't suit me, and I shall spend my pension on brandy and summer gloves and satin sandals and say we've no money for butter. I'll sit down on the pavement when I'm tired and gobble up samples in shops and press alarm bells and run my stick along the public railings and make up for the sobriety of my youth. I'll go out in my slippers in the rain and I'll pick the flowers in other people's gardens and I'll learn to spit. You can wear terrible shirts and grow more fat and eat 3 pounds of sausages at a go, or only bread and pickle for a week. and hoard pens and pencils and beer mats and things in boxes. But now, she's age 40 when she wrote this, but now we must have clothes that keep us dry and pay our rent and not swear in the streets, set a good example for the children. We must have friends to dinner and read the papers. But maybe I ought to practice a little now so people who know me are not too shocked and surprised when suddenly I am old and start to wear purple. It's a wonderful poem, and I call this archetype of elder spirituality the archetype of the trickster. The ability to be humorous, the ability to be creative, the ability to be unorthodox and unconventional, and run your sticks along the public railings. If we want to refer to a spiritual story, a biblical story, I would bring before you the story of Sarah and Abraham, who were called out of their land when they were 90 and 100 years old. They were given a new name. They were told that they would have a baby unexpectedly. And Sarah laughed when she received this divine message. She burst into laughing. And God said, "Why did you laugh?" And Sarah said, "I didn't laugh." She tries to deny it, but God confronts her on it. This is all in the Bible. And she does become pregnant. She does have a child. And what name does she give to that child? Anybody remember? I'm not quite in the Bible belt yet. Isaac. What does Isaac mean? Zev, you probably know. It's from it's from the Hebrew word Yitzhak, which means to laugh or laughter. And Sarah says, "I'm going to name him Isaac, so now everyone will laugh with me. They'll laugh at the glory of what God has accomplished." And Isaac becomes the progenitor of the Jewish people and therefore really the whole Judeo-Christian tradition. It all began with a kind of marvelous late life joke enacted by God. And when we try to bring this into our current life, I would say something like, when we look around us at the most exemplary elders we know, or we envision our own elderhood, we realize that there are possibilities of new life, new birth, new relationships, new activities, new personality features being expressed, new living situations. And part of late life spirituality is not just about wounds and losses and preparing for death. It's also about humor, creativity, and the rebirth that becomes possible. Like in that poem, when I'm an old woman and finally wear purple and finally express dimensions of myself that were previously undeveloped. So in our communities, whatever we're planning today, let's also include a lot of humor. Let's include art, creativity. Let's stimulate one another to find and express new dimensions of the self. And in closing, I would just say about 15 years ago, I envisioned, just working as a philosopher, these kinds of communities, residential and educational communities for older adults who were interested in really using later life as a time of creative growth and spiritual development. And it's been delightful to work with Dean Peterson, who's accomplishing this in Abington, Virginia, and teaching others how to do it around the country. It's also been delightful to see a whole movement developing, sometimes called the Conscious Aging Movement, that has given rise to conferences, workshops, many, many books, reading groups, different kinds of communities, been featured in the New York Times and the Washington Post and, you know, everywhere, all over the media. So we're just at the beginning of a big cultural movement that's going to be building and cresting for the rest of the 21st century, and we're just kind of on the cutting edge of it. I think what we do here today will be a part of that much larger movement. So thank you.